Ladies and gentlemen, I have an amazing amount of information tonight, all of which I feel we must take a look at. But there are two bits that I want to present up front to make sure that we get this across. And those two things are as follows. First, I want to talk about why U.S. farmers are the sole exception to the global protests. Tractors taking to the streets, farmers demanding compensation and policy changes and acknowledgments and other forms of support from their governments in the wake of this terrible years now of seasons. So we're going to talk about that. And then second, I want to frame tonight's discussion with this piece of information, which is that the National Weather Service has just issued a warning, echoing their warning from last year going into 2019 that there would be flooding in the Midwest. Now they're issuing, like I said, a similar warning, but even going so far as to say that should there be snowfall this winter, which there already is, it's going to be even more widespread flooding in 2020 than there was this past spring in 2019. Now, just to make that clear, that means that the flooding that caused the immense livestock losses, especially in Nebraska with that blizzard in March, and then as the flooding went downstream, stayed throughout the Midwest, there are still parts of the country underwater even now. This is the flooding that was warned about that, like I said, wiped off those cattle, saw immense losses, hundreds of millions of dollars of stored grain and farm infrastructure destroyed. It was then declared uninsurable, and so farms and farmers going out of business, losing their livelihood even back then. This is the same flooding that stuck around long enough to cause record prevent plant by a factor of three, meaning farmers, it was too wet to get any crops in the field. Farmers were throwing seeds into water, trying to just hope that they would take root. Even then, those crops that did get into the field were so delayed that it was no plant 19, right? No plant 19 became now, as fall was also wet and cold, the harvest from hell. All summer, there have been feed shortages, hay shortages, fodder shortages, $65 hay bales in Ohio. We've covered reports of this, all of this stemming from the flooding. And now, like I said, now coming home with the harvest from hell to roost. Six states in the United States declaring declaration of emergency, and Alberta, we'll see today, doing the same thing in the name of trying to raise public awareness of just the level of losses, the severity of the situation we are all facing, and the threats to our food security in the wakes of the 2019 flooding and delayed planting and harvest from hell. All of this, it turns out, we're hearing now, is going to be even worse next year. All of this is just a warm-up, so to speak. The harvest from hell, the disasters declared in those states, the sugar shortages, the coming from the loss of sugar beets, the seed shortages in Idaho, from seed potatoes to green beans to seed corn, oh, the corn, the beans, the losses, the scale of losses there, still largely unacknowledged by the USDA, and the massive efforts then to hide those losses. We heard from top producers talking about how forces are at work trying to stymie this information getting out at the expense of getting prepared, trying to keep it a secret, and hoping that we would get a better harvest next year and just sweep this bad season under the rug. Now we see clearly that that isn't going to happen. All of the optimism from farmers, the hope that next year, and I understand, I appreciate where it comes from. What else can you do when you almost lose everything but hope and pray that next year things will be better? It's not. And we understand that now. Here it is, well stated. Heavy snow in some states, this is now, could prevent farmers from harvesting the rest of their corn and beans until 2020 in the latest weather-related blow to growers, that is after the propane shortages, also because of the wet fall. Flooding from torrential rains delayed spring seeding and prompted record amounts of acres to go unplanted. The corn harvest as of Sunday, this is during Thanksgiving, people are still busting, trying to get their crops out of the ground. Still just 84% done U.S.-wide. It's the slowest rate in a decade. All of this, again, a warm-up for next year as the situation worsens, as these losses mount, as the seed shortages we don't recover from by virtue of next year's better crop. This is now a cascading situation, and we can see it clearly. If the crops, it's going to tighten supplies, it's obvious. At a time when cash prices are already on the rise, that's important to call out, because the market isn't reflecting this, but cash prices are feeling it. People on the ground are feeling it. And of course, we are. Look at how those months of precipitation, these are the precipitative extremes that come during the minima of solar activity. This is what's going on right now. It's happened in previous cycles, in the Maunder minimum, in the Dalton minimum, in the Sporer minimum before that, and now we're in, over here on the right, 2019 at the rock bottom, record low modern era levels of solar activity. And this has a few different effects. These are NASA's own numbers saying that solar cycle 25 on the right is going to be 40% lower than solar cycle 24, during which a lot of this has already started happening. Like I said, these are the symptoms. We can glean these from the past by looking at the records of what happened. Torrential rain and flooding versus droughts, both precipitative extremes. And those are exactly what we're seeing take out modern agriculture across the world right now, plus the hailstorms, all of this. So when we see now the National Weather Service saying, yeah, it's going to flood again next year, might be a bit worse, we need to pay attention. We need to understand very well how this has happened in the past, how this last year has already gone down, and that, as I said, this is a warm-up, which is perhaps an unfortunate bit of language to use describing a cooling phase, but there we are. That's what I said. I want to focus now on the farmers and the censorship in the U.S., like I mentioned. So zoom back to Alberta, where they've been affected also by this harvest from hell. They've declared, as I mentioned at the top, an agricultural disaster to try and raise public awareness, with 35% of their crops still in the ground, and it's unlikely that more of it will be harvested before spring. Again, if there's flooding then who knows. It's the worst we've seen for a long time. So this then, coupled with the propane shortages that were then exacerbated by the strike on their national rail, just sent farmers into a rage. That's just the last straw. They've literally gone into the streets, started throwing bags of corn onto City Hall, in a form of protest, trying to, you know, get them to end the strike because they can't harvest their crops while there's no propane to dry it. And so elevators are refusing shipments. I mean, it's game over for these farmers. So what else can they do other than go throw corn at the mayor? So Justin Trudeau is being, you know, threatened by farmers, declaring that their livelihood is at risk, etc. Briefly, I just want to remind you that these Quebecois farmers are not alone in their action. When you look around the world, you see tractors taking to the streets like this without propane. Everything is derailed, is what this sign says here. You see farmers taking to the streets, not just in Canada, but in Germany, where they were doing it in Hamburg and in Berlin. You see the same farmers protests going on. That was because of German policies. I want to be clear here. It's not all because of crop losses. Those are because of bad carbon dioxide-based, you know, CO2-based agricultural restrictions. Farmers in Amsterdam were taking out because of the nitrogen policy, taking their tractors into the streets. Farmers in Dublin going out and blockading the city, trying to get better prices for their cattle. So the exact reasons differ from place to place. In Italy, it was because of a frost emergency, because unseasonable frosts descended across the Mediterranean climate, damaging their olive trees and destroying 54% of the olive harvest, which led them to olive oil shortages. You know, we've talked about all of this. And so I'm just quickly reminding ourselves that you see farmers across the world taking to the streets, with one notable exception, and that being in the United States. Where are the farmers here? Because clearly it's been a harvest from hell. It's been a terrible year. We've had trade war threats, all sorts of crazy stuff. And why aren't farmers in the streets? Well, ladies and gentlemen, here's why. Matt Swanson, who goes by Max ROI Farmer on Twitter, came out the other day with a tweet for which he was quickly reprimanded by the industry, by Bayer itself. According to Bayer employees and contractors who have direct messaged me now, I will be reported to Bayer for speaking negatively about outcome-based pricing. Before I go any further, what was this crime that he's committed, this thought crime for which Matt is being thrown to the wolves? Here's the tweet. Matt tweeted, and he merely asked, if you guys are looking at pricing schemes like outcome-based pricing for Bayer crops, what do you think? Is that going to make you more or less likely to do business with them? He didn't even suggest his own opinion. He didn't qualify it at all. He just asked, what do you think? But that is enough, again, ladies and gentlemen, to wholly trigger, it gets the attention of the agricultural brown shirts. This is an intelligence agency watching everything farmers post on Facebook and Twitter, social media. They're watching you. And that's why farmers can't talk about what they're seeing as openly as one might think. It's why it was such a big deal when I got one of the top 1% producers to come on my show and talk about it. The force, the energy that is trying to keep the truth hidden. These are his words on the screen, not mine. That's why it was so big when he shared that we're kicking the can, that we're not making the right rational decisions to ration supply where needed and to shift what we're planting, to diversify our plantings, to make sure that we have food. We're not making those decisions at the national level or at any level because we don't have good data. We're kicking the can hoping for a better season next year. And now we see, again, that's why I framed the conversation tonight with this bit of information. We're not going to have that better season next year. And this is going to make everything much worse. This is why we all need to be growing our food right now. So it turns out that someone from Bayer later got back to Matt and said, you know, we can have a conversation about it, sort of tried to smooth over the water. But it was too late. And Matt was already pretty openly saying, look, thanks for being willing to engage, but I've already seen the teeth. I don't appreciate the glimpse into your corporate culture I got this morning and the further reinforcement sense. So what does that mean if Bayer comes down on you or if Monsanto decides they're not going to do business with you? Well, these folks, this is where you get your seed. This is how you get your fertilizers and your chemicals. All of these operations depend on a lot of inputs. And in many cases, those inputs come from companies that have been consolidated and merged and bought out, and it's just a few stakeholders now. It's like the media. And if you speak ill of these big ag companies, they will cut you off. So you can own your land all you want, but if you can't get seeds to plant, it's a problem for you. And that is the leverage that they hold over farmers, and it's that keeps them in line and silent. You know, in spite of the fact that we've seen people breaking rank talking about these threats, certainly we've seen agricultural analysts like Sean Hackett talking about how we need to find more ways of growing food, but you don't find farmers openly saying, dude, the USDA is lying in many cases, because they can't. This is the enforcement mechanism. It's not just, though, the social media posts that the eye in the sky is watching of farmers. It's everything they do. It's everything they plant and how it's growing. I mentioned this in a recent video about real time, about precision agriculture and how they're monitoring in real time crop production. And some people said I was completely out of my mind, that that's just ridiculous. The government would never do that. Well, I maintain it. And in fact, there have been some supporting articles in the media since then. Here's one on Thanksgiving Day, how satellites track the status of our nation's food supply and help farmers. Right, of course they help farmers. We're from the government. We're here to help. Of course we are. They have to throw that in. Farmers across the Midwest, and then they sort of describe this terrible planting season. These changes and delays in the plans this year have made the job of the USDA pretty difficult. And so to get some help, we went to NASA and the USGS, and we employed their satellites to go ahead and take a peek at everything that everyone is growing. because we require perfect knowledge of our food production. It's a national security matter. Of course they have this information. There are more coverage of this week as Bayer unveiled their new field view. It's been in operation, but this is the public release. And it's not even, it's a step beyond precision agriculture. Real-time access. They also provide you information on what you should be planting where, how you should be fertilizing it, how much water it needs. And in exchange for this perfect information, they'll just take a bit more of your earnings. That's what the outcome-based payments is about. So I've sent a message to Matt, and we'll see if I can get a response from him. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what he thinks. Artificial intelligence, this is from Forbes, is learning with farmers. So now that we've got perfect data, we need to build AI with it, and we can build these decision-making systems given that data. So yes, this is more announcements, public flaunting of what's going on, what they're building as they centralize everything. Here's another bit that builds on previous trends we were keeping an eye on. It's not just the human food supply, right? As I've mentioned, even in this video, there are shortages of feed and fodder for livestock. And we've seen spots of that. Stories reported here and there over the course of this past season. But now it's really hitting home. Poor quality hay crop could mean trouble for livestock. Agronomists are warning that the problem goes back to the rainy weather in May and June. Again, now we see there'll be more flooding next year, so these are going to continue to cascade. It was difficult, if not impossible, to harvest in a timely fashion. And so a lot of the forage was very mature, meaning that a lot of the nutrients were locked up. It was no longer bioavailable. It was less nutritive, less protein. What does that mean for animals? Actually, before I move on, it means that they recommend you need to get your forage tested so that you know you're feeding your animals good food, right? If you're not, what that means is this, that this new crop is milking poorly, the crop the corn silage. From the article, some dairy farmers in the Midwest are seeing drops of 5 to 8 pounds of milk per cow per day as they tap into the new crop forages, especially that terrible corn silage after the harvest from hell, after the record prevent plant. Folks, I want to dip now into the shortages. We talked certainly about these sugar beets that are still in the ground. This is a picture from Todd in Canada where his beets will be staying for the winter. Half of our acres are going to remain unharvested thanks to this frost and now snow. And what that meant, well, yes, was that the USDA is now echoing my warning from last week saying we're going to have a national sugar shortage. And in fact, some media is suggesting that that's even going to hit home before the holidays. So I had thought that we might see something by Valentine's or even Easter candy supplies affected by this sugar shortage after sugar beets froze to death in the Red River Valley. But now we're seeing, no, potential sugar shortages are already striking home amid the holiday baking season. Some bakers need to be listening up. There could be a sugar shortage in the U.S. just in time for the holidays. So another example of how quickly these things echo and reverberate throughout the food supply. Coffee prices. If you don't like sweets, maybe you drink coffee. We've seen droughts in Honduras this year, in Latin America, that is affecting coffee production, in India as well. See, the coffee, which is equal to Honduras, their coffee crop is shrinking up to 33% after extreme weather events of droughts and floods. It's the same thing. It's the precipitative extremes wreaking havoc on crop production worldwide, like the Australian drought we just missed. Coffee prices are spiking as a result of these two, India and Honduras combined, bringing it up from under 8.5 to 11 just in the last month here. It's quite a pop. That's the ETF, by the way, not the futures. This is JJ off. Not that I would recommend you be trading. I would suggest go build some greenhouses. Okay. So cranberries as well, harvest far below average. This is another Thanksgiving-style headline for you here. The unusually wet and cool growing season took its toll on their crops locally and nationally. Quote, we don't have the final numbers, but I'm guessing anecdotally it's about 20% off the top of the cranberry crop. And another domino with the horseradish shortage caused by the loss of the world's largest horseradish producer in the U.S. during the recent frosts. It's all just so crazy. Now Burger King announcing we may have some of our zesty. Apparently they have a zesty sauce that might be running out because they can't get horseradish for it. I'm sure they'll start growing it indoors like Wendy's did with their tomatoes. Folks, with all of these threats to the modern agriculture, you would think that the establishment would be taking steps to ensure food production going forward, trying to make sure that every citizen had a victory garden, that we were going to be well-prepared going into these more difficult growing seasons. Alas, we know that's not the case. We know we have an establishment, or the powers that be, or a cryptocracy that is actively working against that and doing everything they can to enslave us using food and total control over food production. And just a few latest dings in that direction, on that trend. New York City is now the latest to ban processed meats from their school lunches altogether. This builds on their testing the waters with Meatless Mondays. And I'm sure they'll follow suit with the UK schools that recently banned meat from lunches altogether. And then this, an interesting sort of backdoor method of banning meat from restaurants is actually banning the grill itself. So California restaurants are warning natural gas ban takes steak off the table. And as they put it, this is from Bloomberg, say goodbye to good food. The Restaurant Association is warning that flame-seared meat and charred vegetables that you guys like to eat, right? That's why you come to restaurants, is going to go away because California, Berkeley, specifically in California, has said that no new buildings can have natural gas hookups, which precludes them from having a natural gas stove. This is done, just to be very clear, this is being done in the name of reducing carbon emissions. So we see again, this is the very problem that's facing us. This climate problem is being used to flank us on the other side with terrible anti-farming policies. That's why all the farmers are in the streets. Now the restaurants are saying we're not going to be able to cook your food. And lest you think that this won't affect you because you don't go out to eat, well, rest assured they're working on monitoring your spending habits and keeping track of your carbon footprint in that way too. We've called this the fat tax in the past and the meat tax, the luxuries tax. It's going into effect now. Here's a Finland company that's developing an app that they're extremely proud of. It doesn't just sit on your phone. It's not an opt-in thing. No, it integrates with your credit card processors like MasterCard and your bank account. And it looks directly at your transactions without you having to feed it to them, down to the level of individual steaks or tomatoes. It will then proceed to make suggestions on how you can reduce your carbon impact, like maybe you could go vegan for a week, just so we can take away your nutritious food. It's so clear to see the agenda playing out here as the establishment moves to take total control over food production and remove your ability to produce your own food. That's why I keep this tweet pinned. They will never drop this global warming hoax narrative. It is the linchpin of their Fabian totalitarian power grab. Stop eating meat because of climate change. Get into our smart cities and give up your cars because of CO2. The weather warfare floggings will continue. And that has remained true as ever throughout this year. All right, I mentioned we need some good news at the end of a broadcast like this. Especially if all of this is just a warm-up for round two next year. And so here's a bit from the Guardian. How Peru's Potato Museum could stave off the world food crisis. Again, it's putting out that language into the public awareness. So just to point that out there. But what they do is they suggest that, hey, there's these amazing ancient heirloom breeds of potato that have been kept at 5,000 meters in the Andes by shaman that maybe we could use to... No, this article hints at the truth, but it misses the bottom line, which I will now deliver to you. The bottom line is that we don't have to have special potatoes at 5,000 meters in the sky. You can do what they're suggesting here. And by sowing potatoes at different altitudes and different combinations, we can create new genetic expressions, which will be very important to respond to the challenges of climate change. But everyone can do this everywhere. That's how we respond to these challenges. You start saving the seeds coming out of your garden or coming out of what you eat from the supermarket. Any of it. Save it. Grow it. Give it to your neighbors. Talk to your neighbors. I guarantee you there are people close to you that you can find who would be delighted to talk to you about the seeds that they've been saving for years now. I'm one of them. I've got seeds that I'm very proud of. And around here, they'll do great. So look up, you know, through your church or through your Loki, your county ag extension. Look up just anything. Find people around you. It should be easy once you start looking, because they're looking for you too. And get seeds and start growing them. And plants learn year after year. They'll get better at growing where you are. It's called a land race. I've done shows about it. And but I know there's thousands of new people, so we gotta keep this information coming. Start growing your own food. Start these plants in their learning, just as you're learning. There's a learning curve on both sides. And start growing with your neighbors as well. If you're starting from square one, there are some great places to get seeds and start this process. I've mentioned before the Coosa Seed Society at ancientcerealgrains.org, which has some amazing genetics that were created explicitly with the purpose of ending world hunger and then shelved. But now they're available. And I grew a couple of these crops this year so that next year I'll have enough to seed a much, you know, a more significant plot. So I've started now. The seeds are learning. I've got more of them to plant next year, and I'm building up. And I'll be more knowledgeable next year, too. Hopefully I'll do a better job. And then, of course, Baker Creek has some amazing and beautiful and delicious varieties, heirloom varieties, at rareseeds.com, where you can go and... It's also very descriptive. They'll tell you what zones it'll grow in and how frost tolerant it is. So you can go shopping and find more shorter season varieties and frost tolerant varieties of things that you're already growing. And that'll prepare you for what we know now are going to be the more difficult, shorter, colder growing seasons ahead. Folks, that's a big batch of information. I appreciate you watching it. I also appreciate you sharing it. We need to get this information into producers' hands so that they know what's going on and they know what they're experiencing. They know that they shouldn't take short-term bets and mortgage their properties. Instead, they should be diversifying production, looking at regenerative practices, and, you know, getting on board with the future here, because this is the direction things need to be moving right now. All right, thanks for watching. Thanks for sharing. Let's go build a more resilient, more robust, more empowering future. Be well, folks.